LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement. This week it was Trump versus in the courts and the Capitol. Hear about it now on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
A president! Can you believe it?
This is somebody who knows what's right and what's wrong.
You know what podcasts are, by the way?
Talk shows for people who cannot make it in talk radio.
I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up, do the right thing. Watch it.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
And we are live on Ones and Zeros. Welcome back to The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. I am your host, Scott Cosenza, and joining me today, as usually, is the host of Liberty Nation's Liberty Nation Radio, Tim Donner, and contributor to The Uprising. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Scott. And I might point out that Liberty Nation Radio is the first blush of Liberty Nation. Four or five years before the site went up? A little self-promotion there. We've been on the air since 2012. 8 years? Are you kidding me?
Of broadcast excellence, Tim. Thank you. Fantastic. and now entering in this new phase, all the kids are doing it. The world of podcasting, joined recently by Michelle Obama and Andrew Sullivan, by the way, the latest two high-profile podcasters. So,
I would listen to Andrew Sullivan.
We're going to have a great clip of Andrew Sullivan next week on the podcast. He was a guest on Sam Harris, and they had some things to say that I wanted to bring to this week's show, actually, but I didn't have time to produce the clips because, boy, what a packed week it has been for a person who has to read all legal filings in election law cases.
Yeah, no kidding.
As well as attend the Stop the Steal rally and report on it for the sponsor of today's podcast, LibertyNation.com, your source for conservatarian news and analysis.
Now, you were at the Stop the Steal Million MAGA March, whatever you want to call it. You did a lot of really good live coverage for Liberty Nation. And, you know, I did a story on it later that used that event as a springboard to, you know, to fully and finally unmask another one of the big lies from the left, which is that it's the Trump supporters who are a danger to the health and safety of Americans. I mean, here's a group vigorously aggrieved by the result of the election, tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of them gather, not one report of violence from a Trump supporter. And then that night after dark, when those cretins ply their trade, one guy gets stabbed multiple times, 21 people arrested. They blew up some fireworks in an interior space next to a restaurant where Trump supporters were eating dinner. I thought that it's the perfect, it's a perfect statement, a textbook example of where the two sides are. Conservatives feel, and I can tell you, I've spoken to dozens of them, Scott, and almost all of them feel that this election was stolen. Now, whether it was or not, they feel that way. And certainly people who would go to a MAGA rally or Stop the Steal rally certainly feel that way, and yet not a single act of violence or even civil disobedience that I heard. And the other side, which is supposed to be celebrating Trump's defeat, this is what they've been working for 4 years. They finally look like they've beaten him. And what do? They resort to the same kind of violence and bloodshed that we saw all summer throughout the country.
I was in the belly of the beast, and I had to actually go for a couple nights in order to be able to get in the zone and not have to leave and try to, like, because they were going to have things locked down, and they did. I will tell you that while there was violence aplenty from the left, it was from the Antifa types and the sort of regular. It's not appropriate, I think, to just ascribe that to like your workaday Joe Biden supporter, because they don't support violence. I think by and large, it was the Antifas, and it was disgraceful. And to your claim about there not being a single incident of violence from the right, I don't know that to be true, but I can tell you that when I was down there, it was a very much a peaceful rally and demonstration with, you know, it just didn't have a that kind of vibe of an angry, violent march. It was very much of a celebratory kind of feel for people who do believe that the election was stolen. And I will tell you that they're 100% right and 100% wrong. It wasn't stolen in the way that they think it was stolen, in the way that's been poorly alleged in court, I think, over the past week. But it absolutely was stolen. It was stolen when people said that Donald Trump was a racist and supported that in the mainstream media, like he has openly supported racists or racism. And we know the facts show that he hasn't, that he's denigrated racists and challenged them and set the Justice Department after them. And, you know, the idea that he's embraced them or flirted with them is vile and disgusting. And it's been used because so many of the legacy media types are on team anti-Trump or never Trump. And so they're just willing to lie, cheat, and steal. I think for me, that's the message. It's just like the Hunter Biden laptop story, Tim. Twitter implements rules, special rules, and they all go against Republican electoral. You know, if you would say, well, is this going to benefit Republicans electorally or Donald Trump electorally or hurt him? You can guarantee that every new implemented rule is going to weigh in on the hurt Donald Trump side. And that's part of the cheating and the stealing of it and the acting like everybody's playing under the same rules when we know they're not. And so they're right to say that they had this election stolen from them. They have, in a manner of speaking.
Well, but I still find the headline of what you just said, that you think there's no basis for saying there was election fraud.
Oh, no, I haven't said there's no.
Well, you said what they you said it was stolen from them, but not in the way that they thought.
What I would say is there has been no evidence presented in a court of law. OK, and I know that you have. In fact, let's just go ahead and play it, because I think, you know, for the people that are hanging on to the notion that Trump may be the next president of the United States. And I would say they are dead wrong. I think there's no way that Donald Trump.
Okay, but that's a separate question from whether there was election fraud. As I said to you the last couple of podcasts, what I'm concerned about is finding out about election fraud, whether that's going to flip the states.
No, I know that you have, but if you were to re-examine my comments, I think you would discover I said made in court.
Oh, no, I understand. I think the conclusion that most of us have come to, Scott, is that there clearly was election fraud. You've seen it in Philadelphia for as long as, you know, you grew up there. You know what that's like. There was election fraud, but they won't be able to prove it. And part of being effective at election fraud, like in Philadelphia, is being able to cover your tracks. I mean, election fraud isn't useful if you get caught. And Philadelphia, by all accounts, not to mention, I won't even bring in the other cities like Milwaukee and Detroit and Atlanta, where there was the highest turnout in the nation in those four cities by far, especially those among black
those
voters.
Patriots were really motivated to come out and exercise the franchise, Tim. God bless them.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is that.
Yeah, oh, no, I understand what you're saying, and I agree that there was fraud. I don't know that there was fraud if it were proved would overcome the election totals but. I'm totally willing to believe that that's the case.
I mean, I'm struck by, like yesterday, Scott, I was part of a discussion group. It's about 10 people, and they're fairly high rollers, successful on Wall Street and the like.
All right.
And I thought, okay, these are sort of establishment conservatives.
Bilderbergers?
They'll probably think, that let's just move on. Biden's going to be the president, whatever. How's it going to affect the stock market, whatever. But literally all of them also believed that this election was stolen. And that's on top of the more activist people, some of the people who follow LibertyNation.com, and activist conservatives that people follow closely, people that I know, it's almost universal, the belief that the election was stolen. And now it's becoming almost universal that it can't be proven.
Yeah. And, you know, that second part is, I think, where things are just going to have to, you know, if you can't prove it, you can't prove it. And they can't prove it based on all their court filings, Tim. It was a shit show at the Middle District of Pennsylvania Federal Courthouse for the access to get into this hearing. The federal court judge prohibited broadcasting the hearing. So what they could have done is, and like the Supreme Court has done this, you get a couple competent media outlets. And sad to say, you know, LibertyNation.com, which is a great source for conservatory news and analysis, isn't that capable yet in terms of being able to put on site a truck with a live broadcast feed to the world. But there are media outlets who would do that. And so you give those two or three media outlets the feed, right? And then they make their feed accessible to others. But they wouldn't do that. Instead, they had a phone call line where 4,000 people were allowed to call in. Now, this is the most highly anticipated hearing of all the election hearings, right? You think those lines were jammed? It was like getting Springsteen tickets. It was ridiculous, okay? Now, Intrepid, yours truly, I did get on the line early. And because I am expert at getting Springsteen tickets, I was on the line in time. But then the system crapped out and they had to actually shut down the hearing like halfway in, by the way, because all the phone lines cut out. So anyway, I was finally able to make a connection. And then there was all this drama about the lawyers involved. There was unprofessionalism on both sides. Now, you hear more about it on the Rudy side because that's who the legacy media likes to dump on. And he deserves dumping on for his performance.
Rudy hasn't been a practicing attorney for more than 30 years. I don't think anybody should be surprised that he couldn't do any better than he has. But Sidney Powell has apparently gotten pretty high marks. She's well thought of.
Tim, she has not entered an appearance on behalf of the campaign in federal court. That means she's not their lawyer. Uh-huh. So she does play well on TV. Matter of fact, let's take a minute and let's listen to what Ms. Powell has to say about this. Yes?
Yeah, she's talking about she's basically talking about the fallout from the Dominion voting systems, and she makes an incredibly bold claim.
It's massive criminal voter fraud writ large across at least 29 states. It could have been happening. Anytime a voting machine was connected to the internet, and we have evidence that many were, it was obviously happening. It's obvious from the algorithm and the statistics that our experts are tracking out for batches of votes and when the curves changed. And it's going to blow the mind of everyone in this country when we get it all together and can explain it with the affidavits and the experts that have come forward.
Tim, those are... I don't know what the exact word is for how I would describe those allegations. But what I can tell you, you know what those allegations were? And I wasn't being dramatic before. They were absent in federal court. So those allegations that are made on the TV are not the ones that have been made in court. And both in Philadelphia City Court and in Pennsylvania Federal Court, and I think in the state Supreme Court as well, the Trump campaign's attorneys have said that the charges that they've made are not about election fraud. They're about counting ballots outside of the law, meaning with some of the various restrictions, whether it's signatures, whether it's with somebody else watching, whether it's whatever. But they say point blank that it's not about fraud. So argument is not about fraud. So,
I think that begs the point that the Trump campaign is fighting this battle on two fronts, the legal front and then the court of public opinion. They have to prop up those who would support them in their efforts to challenge the outcome of the election. And they're not going to do that by saying, well, you know, we really don't have any chance, but we're going there anyway. They have to, you know, this is what they're doing, I think, is they're working in the court of public opinion, and they're working obviously on a separate track in the courts. But wouldn't you suspect that if you haven't seen it yet, you will see these very charges that Sidney Powell's talking about come before a court? But which court would it be, and in what form?
Well, to challenge an election, you gotta assert a violation of some right that then can be remedied by the court through some order. That it's up to the plaintiffs to decide what and how that takes place. They haven't crafted one that works so far. You know, you let me finish railing on the lawyers at the federal courthouse in Williamsport. You know, I had to resist making the comparison in print from the Little League World Series to Little League lawyers. But, you know, if Giuliani it's beyond him, meaning like, I don't think it's a fair defense to say, well, I haven't done it in 30 years. Well, why did you do it?
No, I'm not saying that's his.
Yeah, okay.
Defense.
No,
I'm saying
that I wasn't attacking you. I mean, you know, for him though, for him to make that defense, like, you know, I couldn't be as much as in my Clarence Darrow fantasy want to be some, you know, two verdict felony murder trial, you know, for somebody who's improperly charged or accused and get them off. I'm not equipped to do that because you have to have the basis in order to, you know, have basically the chops to get that done. And Giuliani shouldn't have been in that courtroom at all. And it showed. And I'm just saying it was, you know, he was asked what standard of review he wanted the judge to apply in the case. And he said the normal standard. Now, there's rational basis, strict scrutiny, and intermediate scrutiny, as you could probably say any first-year law student should be able to say, and Rudy should have said. That's just the kind of thing, just to bring it out of, like, that's not about a preparation thing. That's about you're checked out. You're on Fox News mode, not on federal court mode. And the details matter so much in a situation like that. I can't even say. And then on the other side, and I don't think this was as widely reported because, of course, why would you? But the disgraceful conduct of the Kirkland and Ellis lawyer. So Kirkland and Ellis is big, fancy law firm. They're a lawyer in there, and they represent the secretary. They represent the government. The Secretary of State hired them. And a lawyer in their D.C. office sent Trump's campaign's lawyer like a prank minute long, like crying phone message and maybe some email as well. Like a child, like not behaving like attorneys. They got lucky because, yeah, I see your face. That's exactly right.
What was in the email?
Well, I think it was more of a phone message than an email. It was a baby crying or something like that.
You mean like, wow, why don't you just give up instead of being like a crybaby and challenge?
You know, they didn't go into it beyond that. And I'll tell you what, the lawyer did a really, really great thing. I feel like I'm going to, you know what, let me take a second and name her. Hold on. Linda Kearns is the one who gets the credit, in spite of being the victim of this, unprofessionalism. She didn't do the one thing that she could have done to really get this guy's life in trouble for it, which was just to name him publicly, because all the Trumpers, you know, would be internet trolls. Yeah, exactly. Maybe even Trump himself. So, and also future law firms would risk, you know, they wouldn't want to hire him.
I think you put your finger on something here, that there's a problem with a lot of the attorneys who are part of the Trump legal team because they're afraid of getting blackballed or blacklisted once this whole thing is over.
Well, do me a favor and just stop right there, because Giuliani disclosed during the hearing that the initial slate of lawyers resigned because of pressure from other lawyers at their firm. That's Wilmer.
Right.
No, I don't want to get it wrong, so I won't guess. But Ms. Linda Kearns, just to return to her, she said, look, I've been the subject of all kinds of threats and hate, and you can't even imagine, just for representing the president of the United States of America. Right. And, And she didn't want that to befall, you know, the lawyer who pranked her or harassed her, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think this goes all the way to the top in terms of one would ask the question, why would the president pick Rudy Giuliani, who's a political figure, to be the head of his legal team in court? And I think that what you just discussed is applied here too. No one else, it seems, wants to step up to that, figuring that the image of them that will be indelible or left with the public after this is that they defended Trump in futility, trying to overturn the election, maybe a subject of ridicule and blacklisting and that sort of stuff. Maybe there really wasn't anybody else that both Trump trusted and that he could count on to fight, if nothing else, and who, after all, had been a U.S. attorney. So I guess that was enough. I guess it was a right fit in these circumstances.
As you were going on with that explanation, I thought, you are crazy. But then as you concluded, I thought, maybe you're right. Maybe that's the reason why. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. And also, the legal strategy, whatever you want to call it, it looks to me exactly like if you said to me, what would this look like if Trump just wanted to put up any roadblock he possibly could and also extract money for whatever's next? Because, you know, one thing we always talk about with other groups is to look at them fundraising off of what's happening. And it's very important that we look at what's happening in the conservative world and the Trump world with this. I can tell you I'm on the email list for the fundraising appeals for the campaign, and they have accelerated like you can't believe. And I think they're making money hand over fist to fight this battle, when in fact it's not a terribly expensive battle to fight in the way that they're doing it. And so I think it's a cash cow in some regard. I don't know what.
It's also become a big challenge to the rest of the Republican Party, because at some point you reach a breaking point. Maybe that's not till December 14th, I mean, when the Electoral College meets. So that would be a natural breaking point. But Republicans will start to experience some political damage if they hold on to this too long, when you've got two Senate races in Georgia that could determine, will determine, who controls the Senate. Either the Republicans win one or more of them and maintain control, or they lose both and the Democrats have a 50-50 and then Kamala Harris breaks the ties. So, you know, in that kind of climate where the whole world is going to be descending on the state of Georgia over these next 6 weeks or so until the special election on January 5th.
And we know Governor Abrams is going to be working tirelessly every day between now and then to make sure it's a free and fair election.
The governor designate, Stacey Abrams.
That's the hilarious thing, is she still hasn't conceded, but she's a hero.
Maybe Trump will get, you know what? Maybe Trump, this will be great. Maybe Trump will get up there and say, I'm not going to concede. If you want to name Biden the next president, then fine, but I'm never going to concede. He might do that. I mean, I don't know. At this point, he's not in public much. He's not saying much.
You never have to. He doesn't have to. He doesn't even have to say. He doesn't have to say it like that. He can just say, he can admit defeat without congratulating Biden or admitting that Biden won. He can just admit that he is not going to be the next president of the United States publicly. And he can have that lady certify Biden for transition funds or whatever. You know, that's the way he does it. You know,
I can remember when Al Gore finally conceded after 37 days the election,
when he finally shook Joe Lieberman off his leg to let him get to the podium to concede. You'll recall he was the one that was holding it up the most. It was Lieberman.
Right. But the point is that when Gore finally conceded, the language that he used was, I have called George W. Bush and congratulated him on becoming the president. Okay. Yeah. So that's a passive verb. It's not a for winning the election. It's for becoming president.
Right. You can say, I congratulated Joe Biden on being the presumptive recipient of the majority of electoral college votes.
There's all kinds of
in the upcoming poll of electors.
Yes,
you know.
However fraudulent a result it might be, nevertheless, yes. No, I
you know,
there's any number. I mean, it'll be fascinating to see what the final. Well, we say the final. You know, exclamation point on his presidency, but he's got 2 months left. I mean, and Trump's not someone that lets the grass grow under his feet. You can bet.
Tim, I heard
he's going to be active.
Well, we're going to get into that. Let's get into that in just a second. But before we do, I want to say I heard the most brilliant thing today from a friend, and I told him I was going to steal it, which is that if Biden were smart, he would give Trump like the biggest presidential library ever created for a concession, like a solid good concession. Like, we're going to give you, you know, maybe we'll buy Trump Tower at like 5x the square foot value of the price, put a little juice in his pocket. You know what I mean?
Money talks.
That's exactly right. That's what'll get him out of there. But yeah, okay. So you're 1,000% right. He's got a couple months left. I already saw this one article about so there's this word called burrowing. Do you know this word when it comes to federal employees? Obama did it, was a master at it, and that's one of the reasons why Trump's had such trouble. But Trump's doing it now too, according to this piece. A burrowing is when you get a political appointee and you give them a career position in the agency,
right,
and then you can't fire them. Like, career, for people who don't know,
they got a political in a position where they can't be fired. Right. Yeah,
the very top people at all these agencies are political appointees, which means basically they get fired or resign within a week or two of the new person coming in, and that's how it works. But the regular career employees, they get to stay. So general counsel for one of the major agencies, and it was just talking about these other people that were being, honestly, I felt like sending the person a resume and be like, hey, if you want like a pro freedom person, like, burrowed somewhere, you know, here's my resume. You can burrow.
What was the response, Scott?
I'll let you know.
CC me on that, will you?
How fun would that be though? Right. Like, all your job to do is to just be pro freedom. And Tim, don't forget, you're a hero if you go and steal things off the president's desk, right? Isn't that what we learned from the legacy media?
Wasn't it the Clinton people when they left the White House and Bush came in? The Clinton people pulled all the B's off the keyboards. Remember
the W's, Tim. The W's.
Yes. That's it. They pulled.
And
all
you know
the,
what? If that's W's all they did, the yeah. if that's all they did, that could have been marginally okay.
And there was more than that.
But they stole the place blind and trashed the offices. Is what they did.
A lot of class.
It was absolutely disgusting. Yeah. And somewhere, I mean, there's Clinton. The Clinton homes are furnished with taxpayer paid for White House furniture. They stole the furniture from the White House. The Clintons did.
Yeah. After they probably did that at numerous hotels across the country and maybe the world over the years. I mean, what a legacy to leave. It makes you seem like you are white trash when your people do that.
Oh yeah. They you said,
I'm just saying. Mean,
just yeah.
Saying.
They, yeah. All right. Let's.
So you didn't see any Trump supporters. Did you see any defacing of property? Did you see any intimidation of people walking by who might have been considered Democrats or leftists?
There were definitely the more radically amped up of the Trump folks were mixing it up in the faces of the counter protesters that I saw. I saw a number of counter protesters that were like passive counter protesters. They had signs that said whatever, I forget, you know, something against Trump. And, by the way, there was all sorts. So there wasn't like one type of person there on both sides. You know, there was all kinds of folks there. But I did see a few instances of those passive kind of protesters and there were police around them. And when the police are in front of the people, the pro-Trump people who were trying to like get in their face, you know, it's hard to know how they really would have reacted if the cops weren't there, but they were threatening them like, you know, you're lucky the cops aren't here. You know, we would run you out of here, whatever. And in ways that I would find very intimidating if I was the focus of those comments, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, it was a very large protest. You know, the idea there were a million people there, I think, is just beyond ridiculous.
I heard it like 200,000. Does that sound right?
It's possible, I think, you know. I mean, it's a big thing. The streets were packed for a while, you know. So it was, you know, that's to me like the meaningful thing. Was it, you know, a big, well-attended rally? Oh, yeah, it was a big, well-attended, you know, rally. But in these pockets, so you saw these things. But, no, the mood wasn't, you know, one of, like I say, of, you know, violence or anything. I'll tell you, the one kind of intimidation thing I saw actually happened to me. I'll post, well, we'll have a conversation if I can post the video, because there's this song that goes F Donald Trump, but it's not the letter F, it's the word, right? And for a song that has like four words, it's kind of a catchy song, if a little bit repetitive. But there was a guy standing on the street corner playing that song, F Donald Trump, on Pennsylvania Avenue. And I'm walking by and I'm recording visually interesting things and things that are going on. And I got my my camera out and I started recording him. And he threatened me by saying, "Get that camera out of my face." I thought that was sort of a prelude to violence. And we were both kind of looking around, and I felt a great deal of comfort in the fact that, like, I thought that if he did attack me, I'd have a lot of allies from people who, right, you know, would not be cool with it. But just for the record, I had my camera over 10 feet from the man's face. And that's why I thought it was a prelude to violence, because why would you say that to somebody whose camera is obviously not in somebody's face, except that, you know, you want to give the impression that it is, so that you can do something about it.
Take me on camo. Please and thank you.
I like white.
You take your camera out of my face?
All the niggas in the hood want to fight.
Damn. You're surprised you made all types of money, huh? You don't mean kid.
But
I find it interesting when someone's standing on a street corner, obviously for the sole purpose of attracting attention.
Yeah.
And then he gets upset when someone gives him the attention.
Yeah.
As if somebody wouldn't be inclined to record something like that, which he would have to know. So those people are just deranged. You know, what are you kidding? What can you say? You can't judge them.
You're right. And I'll tell you what,
rational basis.
The problem becomes when you have several of those people at a rally, like, you know, making sure you steer clear. And I can tell you that I was in my hotel room later on and then having dinner with friends. So I saw where the pockets were of, you know, intense law enforcement activity and whatever. And I just stayed away from there in the nighttime because I didn't think I was going to be able to shoot anything of value. And I was concerned for my own, you know, physical safety.
And sure enough,
the district required me to go in unarmed if I wanted to obey the law.
Just to show the cowardice of these people, all of their violence. This is the same crowd from Kenosha, Milwaukee, Seattle, Portland. They all do, they do all their work after dark where nobody can see them because they're cowards. They don't do their work, their dirty deeds in the light of day. Never have. And look at this one. I mean, they wait until it's after dark and the I think it was, 5 hours after the official end, 5-6 hours after the official end of that rally, and people, I guess, were just sort of scattering from the site of the rally. And then they pull this, the Antifa BLM thugs.
Yeah, there's those folks are bad news. And
were you scared?
I wouldn't want to be around them.
Were you scared when you saw them?
I saw them at some distance. So I saw them I saw some of them during the day, and no, I wasn't, because of the way the numbers were. It didn't make, you know, I wasn't. And then I saw them at night, but at a distance where no, I wasn't. And I wasn't. And, you know, obviously I wasn't.
Let me put a finer point on it. If you had seen that same number of people at the same distance during the day, if you saw that at night and there was just a few people walking past you but not with you, would you be scared of them?
I'm scared of the Antifas, even just a few of them. I mean, though, yeah, I mean, it depends on how many people I were with, but I've seen enough of their attacks on broadcast online to know how they do it. They engage somebody from the front, they come at them from the side and the back. And so I would, anytime there would be more than one person that I couldn't square up and keep in front of me, I would be concerned, that they don't fight, they don't fight fair. And of course they don't care that, that Joe Biden is going to be sworn in as the next president of the United States. They want to tear down the country, and they rightfully know that Joe Biden is not,
he's not their guy.
He's the candidate of the banks and the establishment.
Right, but at the same time, you know what? I understand that Joe Biden is another member of the uniparty establishment. Mm-hmm. I understand all of that. However, the sole purpose of putting Joe Biden up as a candidate is the same as that they put up you or me or anybody else. It's just a not Donald Trump. And because the whole purpose was simply to vanquish Donald Trump. Didn't matter who beat him in the eyes of people like Tim, this, as long as he got defeated, and they're still not happy. And
Joe Biden,
they'll never be.
Joe Biden can be not Donald Trump, just as good as anybody in this whole country can be not Donald Trump.
Right.
Don't you forget it.
Because he excels
at being not Donald Trump.
Well, evidently, because we're told he got 5 million more votes than Trump. Incredibly.
I saw this somewhere, and I tell you, I was so busy this week, it was ridiculous, but I so wish I saved where it was. Some headline that said, as he was considering his cabinet, he was considering Dr. Jill Biden for education secretary. Did you see this? Is this a real thing?
Oh, no, I didn't. You're kidding.
No.
I thought she was a medical doctor, Scott. Wouldn't she be health and human services?
By the way, I thought
you followed
she
Dr. Ben Carson.
I say this without irony. I thought she was a perfect, quote unquote, second lady. The 8 years that she spent in the vice president's mansion, you know what I heard out of her? Nothing. She's
who
a teacher.
Knew she, who knew she teacher. Was even alive?
Yeah, I mean, no, but she's school teacher doing nice things, and I hope she continues to do that.
I mean, you've got this thing where you've got, of the four people at the top there, you've got the president, who's obviously got all his power. You got the first lady, who does all kind of ceremonial things, and she's in magazines and everything.
She ruined school lunches, by the way. Right, let's recall that.
Then you've got the vice president, who gets attention because he can break ties in certain instances, or he gives significant speeches at the
president state funerals of
the second lady, nobody. I mean, she could disappear. She could be kidnapped for 4 or 8 years, and nobody would hardly know.
Her one job is probably just to not look as attractive as the first lady.
Yeah.
Make sure that her dress doesn't clash.
That's the comment of the day, Scott. That's good. Of course, with Mrs. Pence, that's not a problem because nobody's going to match Melania.
She could be my next door neighbor. I wouldn't be able to. I would not be able to tell you that I've seen that person before, honestly.
I think I probably would because I watched the Republican convention and she spoke at some point, but I'm not even sure myself.
Well, I was going to say Melania. No, Melania was an awesome first lady. I can't think of anything that she did that was off-putting. She looked good. There you go. I mean, I don't mean to be sexist about it. I just mean she didn't do anything. Like, really, Michelle Obama did ruin school lunches in this country for lots of school districts and kids.
First ladies tend to take on projects for political purposes. Of course, Hillary took on healthcare. We saw where that ended. It was a disaster. Laura Bush took on reading. Then Michelle Obama, she took
literacy,
school,
right? Not just reading, but literacy.
Literacy, yes. Michelle Obama took up school lunches so that she could be the czar of healthy eating. But she also took
There's
up
not
Scott,
enough Tuscan kale, Tim, in the country to go around for the nation.
But she also took up military families. And there was something where the Obamas decided, obviously for political reasons, that because he was weak on defense, as it's described, sort of anti-military, that the way to soothe the savage beast of people who were offended by that was to have the first lady be all in the face of military families and be so committed to the people who've served the country. And so that's for political purposes. Melania Trump, I mean, she is the most beautiful, gracious first lady since Jackie Kennedy. I think she's probably even more beautiful. But, you know, she could have served as a, if the media hadn't been so biased, she could have served as a great role model. Here's a woman basically who made something big out of herself. She had her good looks, but she didn't just use that. And she was a model, but she didn't just use that. The woman is, she's fluent in five languages. She's a very well educated.
Michelle Obama is a hero. And I hear you talking about this potentially illegal immigrant to the United States. It's disgusting to hear.
But I mean, there was a missed opportunity for her to serve as a role model for young girls who can grow up to both be a model and to be a first lady.
I would love to see a no joke, no partisan, real down the middle, like MIT statistical analysis of references to Michelle Obama's achievements and intelligence and beauty, okay? And references to Melania Trump's achievements, intelligence, and beauty. And then you could cut them in half because two terms for Michelle and one term for Melania, most likely. I still wouldn't call Joe Biden, by the way, president-elect because it's not appropriate because he's not the president-elect, even though I believe he's going to be sworn in.
But president-elect is a designation given to someone
it's an actual legal thing. It's a thing. Yeah.
Shall we just do a quick refresher on that? December 14th, the electors meet and decide.
I should have never gone off the tracks. I got like, all right. Listen.
But that's like 15 seconds. Come on. You can't expect me to be more concise than that, Scott. Come on.
No, I'm not. But the point is, they don't go out of their way to elevate. You know, I was in the supermarket the other day trying to find some pre-shutdown toilet paper and to no avail. And
we bought the store out.
And they, I walked by the magazine rack and it's Michelle Obama on the cover of it was like Time Magazine
Back
or something
to
like
the
that.
Future.
And by the way, why is she on the cover of? She wasn't running. She's got
Scott.
Tim, is it Celebrate the New Podcast?
The Biden presidency is a revival of the Obama years. Right. That's all it is. Look at the people he's going to surround himself with.
It's classy.
We're going to see John Kerry again. John Brennan's going to come back into the picture. James Comey. Maybe James Comey gets rehired. We're going to see all Wilmington the same cast of characters.
When Wilmington was the center of the universe, Tim. I'll tell you what, that's...
you're talking about the center is now around the Wilmington White House? As
you know what?
You presciently called it back in, I believe it was February or
you
January
left. I bet
year.
You Dewey Beach real estate is off the charts right now, okay? Good
Delaware
luck.
Is hot.
Good luck trying to get in there. But my point is, even that, Michelle Obama did nothing. She had a pretend job that the University of Chicago gave her. They gave her hundreds of thousands of dollars so that they could have access to her senator husband. The job was so important that when she left to go to D.C., they replaced her with nobody because there was no senator's wife that they could
because
put in
that
chair.
Nobody who could possibly carry the mantle of Michelle Obama. They wouldn't want to stick some unfortunate soul in the tracks of somebody impossible to follow.
You know,
that kind of greatness.
They should just call the job senator's wife. That's the job. It's senator's wife. Sure. And, you know,
well, how do you think?
You what's it pay? $350?
Why do you think Joe Biden and his family cut all those deals over time that we saw from the laptop at the computer store in Delaware?
You know what, Tim? When Joe Biden goes to Bo's grave and prays on these deals, Bo's ghost tells him to go ahead and take the check. So I don't understand what your trouble with it is. It's all been vetted. And
are we going to get into the laptop thing again?
And I don't think so. Are we? Do you want to talk about
right.
it?
No, I don't. I have no desire. None.
Now, there's no news on that. By the way, just to wrap it up.
By the way, I'm sure there'll be a thorough, continuing thorough investigation of it when the Biden administration takes hold. I'm sure they'll still want to get to the truth.
You know, there are some journalists who will be less afraid than I think to be critical of Biden once Trump's,
sure.
And we will see some and maybe even Kamala Harris, by the way, person who wants him to maybe resign early and let Herter come in. You know, if you want
here's what I think is possible. A couple of things. First of all, I think the press is going to try to be hard on Biden at the beginning to prove that they can be unbiased and they can take on Biden the same way as they did Trump. And that'll last a week or two just to make a show. But the other thing is that it'll be interesting to see how the Democrats do handle this prospective new president, because he's not the apple of anybody's eye. I mean, I didn't meet one person in the country who said they were enthusiastic about a Biden presidency. Now, you know, the Democrats now are in a position where they could say, look, this laptop stuff, this foreign dealing stuff, Joe, you're going to get impeached over it. And I don't know if we can protect you. There's a lot of people in our own party who are angry. Maybe you ought to just go ahead and resign. Let Kamala take over. And then they have their, you know, they have their most liberal member in the entire U.S. Senate in the Oval Office making decisions. Now, I think that's a bit.
Do you think they'll still let
far-fetched?
Do you
but
think
not
they'll
much.
Still let Dr. Biden stay as Secretary of Education in the Harris presidency, or will she have to go as well?
They might let her stay in the White House for a while, like Jackie Kennedy after JFK was assassinated. You know, just as a nice gesture, and Kamala will move in with her white husband and her two white kids.
All right, Tim. Well, you said it first. Let's timestamp that. Matter of fact, we should timestamp it just for the record. It is right now 3:29 in the PM on the 19th of November. And I will say that just to give a roundup of the court stuff, the Supreme Court looks like they're not going to do squat on the extra day ballot case that's before them. They have taken a 2-week break before they're scheduled to hear arguments. We haven't heard a peep since Alito issued that one ruling. I think that's a dead letter. And also, I think it's inconsequential. I think the vote, it won't even matter in terms of the totals there.
Does anything get to the Supreme Court
in this election case? That's your question, right?
Yeah.
So Rudy said during the hearing on Wednesday, when basically he was the judge. And by the way, the judge in that case, I thought, did a great job dealing with the bad lawyering on both sides. One of the guys, you know, it's one of those things where, like, he let, you know, as bad as Rudy was, the judge could have embarrassed him, like that with that thing I told you about with the standard of review, for instance. Mm-hmm. The judge could have said, you know, and he could have done it without it just being matter of fact, like, you know, that's not a standard of reviewer, but he helped him out. In other words, he didn't call attention to the fact that he was bumbling and ill-equipped and unprepared. And I was kind of seething when this one of the lawyers, this Mr. Aronchek for one of the intervener parties, which means like a public interest group that's basically, you know, allowed to present an argument. I'm pretty sure that's who he was representing. He was calling he was insulting Giuliani's argument. And he also used colloquialism like whatever and things like that. And I was just thinking like, oh, I hope no law students are dialed in and listening to this and thinking this is how a federal court hearing goes, because it's not from both sides. But in any case, I thought he did a good job. And he was just an interesting side note. He's an Obama appointee that was confirmed with 100% a unanimous voice vote. So it wasn't even, they didn't even bother recording their vote. It was unanimous voice. So he was an uncontroversial nominee. And you could see why I thought he did a good job of kind of hurting those cats. So, but back to your question, Giuliani said at one point he made a comment that basically like, hey, you're probably going to lose this motion. And Giuliani was like, well, we expect, you know, we brought motions and expected to lose so we could get to the Supreme Court or that we would be able to present that to the Supreme Court. So that's what Giuliani said. But again, I think, Tim, that kind of, man, I'll tell you, it falls right into the same track of let's just ride it out for the contributions. And we'll say we're fighting to the Supreme Court, even though it looks like there's no question there for the court to answer. So I don't think they're going to be successful in that. I think they will try. And I think it benefits them even in a non-cynical political way to try, meaning for all the 70 plus million people that voted for Donald Trump, to, for him to be able to stand up and say, I gave it my due. I sent the best people I could to try to secure the victory that you all worked for. And so for that, you know, it doesn't cost Trump anything to do this. It's all good for him. The people who hated him are just going to hate him. I expect it to continue for a short amount of time. Just by the way, just my crystal ball is the end of next week. These cases are all pretty much done with.
But don't you think they'll come up with some other ones until we get to, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Trump basically takes this absent a court victory here or there. He takes it to about the end of this month. Takes it about another 2 weeks or so. And then at that point, I think he has to, if not concede, admit that Joe Biden is going to win. That's my, I mean, I don't have any basis for picking November 30th, December 1st, but I kind of think by then it'll all be exhausted again, absent any court victories that they may score in the meantime.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable, man. But then again, Donald Trump, it's 2020.
Anything's possible.
Who the hell knows? The turkeys may revolt and kill all the humans by then. And some Thanksgiving reversal from a movie. We could.
So we're going to do this. The next time we get together, we'll be over stuff from Thanksgiving because we're going to have Thanksgiving together. So we'll be able to monitor each other's eating habits, Scott.
Gee, Tim, you make it sound such a fellowship filled experience. I can't wait. And for everyone else who's listening and watching, we thank you. And I'm thankful for them. And we'll be more thankful for them, Tim, if they tell a friend and share the good news of, and I don't mean that in a sacrilegious way.
In a religious sense, I understand. Sacrilegious God, way. Yes, I got it.
Share the good news.
You don't have to preach the gospel, podcast. Scott. I understand.
A podcast of LibertyNation.com. And Tim, let's thank our sponsor, LibertyNation.com, a conservatarian news and analysis website, and Liberty Nation's proud content partner, WhatFinger.com. WhatFinger is an aggregator site. More important than ever is a place to go and see a kind of panel of what's happening in the world today. We talked about it before. Drudge has become really unreliable for people who are looking for high quality news from a conservative perspective. And that's what WhatFinger offers in spades. Please visit WhatFinger.com, Liberty Nation's proud content partner. Tim.
They are what Drudge used to be.
Thankful for you, buddy.
You too as well. I give thanks for you. I do give thanks for listeners. You know, we've been at it for almost 4 years now, and our audience is growing and we're getting on the video and everything. And I'm glad that we've brought everybody along with us for a pretty wild ride.
Tim, I credit the Jabbo with a number of views, but otherwise in full agreement.
Esprit de Jabbo.
We'll see everybody next week. Ciao.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
Liberty Nation Gen Z. Becoming a strong defender of freedom and liberty doesn't just happen, it's taught. LN Gen Z is your portal for news that's hot, engaging articles without the spin. Go to lngenz.com for riveting videos that foster critical thinking. Download worksheets and quizzes for each age level. At lngenz.com, the future starts today. Combating propaganda, defending freedom. LNGenZ.com. A free thinking future starts here.